On this week's episode of Loose Cannons, we find eternal pleasure with Nana, the true key of pleasure. Hello, my name's Justin the Clue, and I'm here today with
Matthew Kumar, as always.
And this time, we have something real special. You know, when we started Loose Cannons, we were hoping that we would stumble into these gems that we would never watch normally. And with Nana, the true key of pleasure, we got the exact opposite of that. We got movies that we wish we had never seen, because they're boring and they suck.
I mean, Nana, true key of pleasure, I mean, going in, obviously we expected a real kind of Indiana Jones type of thing, right? It's called Nana and the True Key of Pleasure. Like a grandma, and in like the 30s, and she's got to fight Nazis to find the true key of pleasure that Hitler's looking for.
Yep, and she finds the key, and she's like, this will unlock pleasure for everyone. Down with Nazism!
Yeah, she opens the thing with the key, like it's kind of like the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark, but instead of like evil ghosts.
Everybody orgasms.
Every orgasms at once, yeah. And everyone's like, oh, that feels good, I can get on with my day now.
Wait, that's what's been keeping people back is like, I need to orgasm?
Yeah, I think so. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, you're at work, you're having a tough time, you know, crack one out, get on with it, you know?
Did you see that research that showed that 40% of people masturbate at work?
40% of people?
40%.
Like in the bathroom?
Yes.
Or, their
or
office,
at their desks.
I once
knew someone who said, I masturbate at my desk all the time.
Man or a woman?
Woman.
I mean, maybe I'm incorrect, but it feels like a woman could do it more easily. Do you know what I mean?
While us men are just shooting jizz everywhere when we're doing it.
Well, I mean, like, you can't... I mean, a woman can sort of do it over or under our pants, let's say, in a way that's more subtle, right? Whereas if you're a man, you've really got to, you know, work the shaft, as it were.
Well, here's the thing. We are not women, so we should not comment on this at all.
It's true. I'm sorry.
Because us men, it takes us 20 seconds and a visual image of something dirty, and there, we peed our pants.
It's true. Well, I mean, it's not pee, Justin. I mean,
wait, what? It's not?
Yeah, it's like you're like an 8-year-old.
Oh my God, you're blowing my mind, Matthew.
You know, when the man and the woman, they love each other, the man puts his pee-pee in her hoo-hoo and he pee-pees. You know? He pee-pees.
All right, so... As you can tell from this long, rambling conversation, this was another fucking sex movie that we had to watch by Canon Films. The difference from the ones before, though, is that this one was produced by Golan and Globus.
Yes, and the thing is, to some extent, I would say that this is the continuation of what I'd call Golan and Globus's Women Are Evil trilogy. Because we started with Last American Virgin, where obviously women will always end up with the jock, even though you're the nice guy. Then we get 10 to Midnight, where we have our guy murdering all kinds of women for being bad. And then we get Nana, which is literally about a woman who is not an old lady, she is not a Nana, who just fucks over every man that she comes into contact with, basically for no clear reason.
And this is one of those movies, too, where you have to buy into the conceit that the woman that's at the center of it, the Nana, is so beautiful that every single man that lays eyes on her will instantly fall in love with her and do whatever she wants.
There's been a bunch of movies kind of like this. I mean, when we go all the way back to the beginning of the canon thing, a lot of the Jules Sarno movies are about women who every man who sees the woman is captivated by them. I mean, do you know what that trope really comes from? This sort of like the woman who is just captivating?
Well, I do know that the director of this film, Dan Woolman, is a Golden Globus regular. He did one of the Lemon Popsicle films called Baby Love.
Okay.
I don't know if it's about fucking a baby, but let's assume that it is.
Probably.
And he also made Made in Sweden.
Well, there we go.
Yeah, that was years ago, the Christina Lindbergh one.
Which is the same deal as this, which is like a woman who is completely captivating that everybody who sees her is just like...
just destroys everybody's lives of the people around
her. Distracted by them. It's like, this is a real return to the old school, depressing sexploitation then for canon. And just like those movies, it is incredibly tedious.
Oh my God, it's so boring. Right off the bat, you know, it starts off with inspired loosely by the works of Emile Zola.
Yes, and it literally says loosely based because it's so farly disconnected from what the actual story of Nana is. Although the original novel, which is like part of a long series of books this guy did.
There's almost like 100 films based on the Nana novel.
Yes, she's kind of like, it's basically a woman who destroys everyone around them. She's like a prostitute who started poor, becomes rich, destroys a bunch of men. And then at the end of the book, actually, the payoff is that she dies slowly and painfully from smallpox.
This does not happen in this movie. Because this movie, we're supposed to side with Nana and just have as much fun as she has destroying all these people's lives. And I mean, most of the men she meets are jackasses.
Oh yeah, for sure. It's not really kind of like made like clear. I mean, there's almost no plot in this movie, let's be honest. It's not really clear what you're supposed to get out of it. I think this, it really feels like one of those movies, even more so than those early canon films, where it's just supposed to be like, ooh, boobs. Ooh, a wee bit of bush. You know, like just enjoy nudity.
But as we talked about before, one of the problems is there's a bunch of boobs and there's some bald old men oogling them.
Yeah. Oogling them?
Isn't that ogling them?
I think it's ogling, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's ogling. You're right.
Well, oogling is like, I guess, like motorboating maybe?
With your eyes?
Motorboating with your eyes, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so, I mean, let's kind of run through the movie fairly fast. Did you notice Canon Films' Easter egg right at the beginning of the movie, though?
No, what was it?
The house that the bordello is literally the same house from Lady Chatterley's Lover. It's the exact same entrance and everything. So they clearly had access to that house multiple times, and they used the exteriors. Then I think what happens is the guy comes in, you've got to come into this bordello to see the magician. And so because I'd just seen the house from Lady Chatterley's Lover, I was thinking, ooh, maybe it's going to be the Magician of Lublin is performing at this bordello.
You think it's going to be like a Golan and Globus verse of characters from other movies?
That does not happen. What basically happens is it's, I mean, I guess burlesque houses were like this, but it's the burlesque house from The Simpsons, right? It's like the red curtains, like women doing the dancing with the dresses and stuff.
Everyone's pretty much naked, standing around.
And we kind of get interested in Nana, who is going to be performing for the first time, I guess, that night.
With Georges Méliès, the famed director of A Trip to the Moon.
So is that actually who it is? Because I was like, I was confused.
Yes, it is.
Because the magician in this, burlesque house puts on a porno film, right? Starring Nana.
And if you watch that porno film that he plays, it is not in the style of the time. He must have invented the close-up, the pan, tons of cinematic techniques.
But they're not very entertaining, these porn movies, let's be honest.
No, it's just a man kind of humping a woman.
If you want to see men's butts sort of moving rhythmically, this is the movie for you. I think I feel like this is the second or third canon film I've said that about, actually.
So there's this main character, or at least we assume that he's main character, falls in love with Nana, wants to see more of her. His family doesn't approve. I'm just skipping right through this. We're going to get highlights after this.
Yeah.
His dad ends up going to the same bordello where Nana is performing with the emissary of Scotland.
No, not just the emissary of Scotland. The guy's father is Count Moffat or something like that.
Yeah.
And he is the guy who is taking care of the actual Prince of Scotland. Now, based on when this movie is set, there is no Prince of Scotland, right?
The Prince of Scotland in this is one hell of a horn dog.
They're driving around, they pass the bordello, and the Prince of Scotland's like, hey, I was just, checking Yelp on my phone here, and I see this building here has excellent reviews. Maybe we should go in, you know?
And he's like, oh, no, we should not. This is an establishment of ill repute.
And he's like, no, man, we're going in there. So they go in. I mean, he doesn't
throws his kilt on, and he's like, give me some haggis.
Yeah, exactly. He's very Scottishly dressed, let's say, but has no accent whatsoever. But then he goes in, and they see Nana perform probably one of the most racist things to happen in a canon film since we've seen Goodbye, Uncle Tom, I would say.
Well, it's the classic flash bomb turn someone into blackface joke.
What happens is she's lying on a sort of like a recliner with a rabbit. He uses Georges Méliès, a famous racist Georges Méliès. he uses his flash bomb and she turns into a black lady holding a banana with a big afro, and then she does jig and then runs off, and I was like, oh my god.
But the father of the guy we thought was our main protagonist, but who doesn't really matter because we don't see him until the end of the movie, falls in love with Nana instantly.
You know, like, instantly. Because he just loves the idea of when you can transform back and forth between races in a kind of racist way.
Yeah, that's right.
We get a lot of footage, kind of like vignettes, again, of Nana's life. So, for example, the young guy that we think is the protagonist, who is never not the protagonist, he runs to go and see her with like flowers, and we see how there's a whole like queue of guys waiting, like queued up outside the door to shag Nana, and we cut inside, and she's like making it with some sort of like racist chic character who's brought his own goat into the room so he can have fresh goat milk while he's shagging her.
When these scenes were happening, I was having like happy hooker flashbacks.
Oh yeah, it's real bad.
They did really racist and stereotypical things as well. Remember there was like the gorilla room?
Oh yeah. And then Nana convinces one of the ugly bald men to buy her a house. And that house is like decorated in the way of like... Have you ever played Animal Crossing, Justin?
No.
Like if you play this game, it's like you decorate houses. And when you get so much stuff, you just throw everything around the house. Like you have like chairs here, everything. It's just like full of shit. There's cushions all over the floors.
Didn't you love to play Animal Crossing?
Oh, I did. I played it for like 150 hours.
150 hours?
Yes, I actually did.
Did you have like a family and see them grow old and die?
It's not how the game works, really.
Oh, I thought Animal Crossing is souls going across the River Styx, for we are all animals.
Yes, it's, that would be good though. Maybe that's a metaphor that I haven't understood about it.
So wait, if you go to your game and turn it on, won't all those characters be alive and like starving and stuff like that?
Most of them leave, like, just leave your town. They just leave forever if you don't, like, take care of it.
Where do they go?
Other towns, I guess. You know, like a farm.
Do they exist, or are they just fictional towns?
Yeah, other towns. You know, it's like how your parents said, like, you know, your dog went to live on a farm.
Yeah, and your dog just died.
What? The dog died, Justin?
Yeah, he did.
Oh, my God. They took it back. I have to call my parents right now.
And they strangled it.
Right. So, basically, Nana's a disinterested working girl. The protagonist character, or fake protagonist character, goes around her house, and he's like, I'm in love with you, and what she basically does is stand so he can just see right up her fanny. Mm-hmm. Like, this movie's...
Right up the butthole, Kevin Smith style.
This movie's... Well, fanny, I meant in the British style.
What does that mean?
Fanny means, like, the lady parts, not the bum hole.
Oh, I thought fanny was butt.
We've definitely had this conversation on this podcast before.
I don't... Have we?
For sure. It's not butt. It's front bum. Okay.
Okay. What, you call it the front bum?
That is also a British term. It's not one I enjoy. It's not one of my favorite. Not one of my favorite.
Okay. But, all right, come on. Can we just, let's speed through
so
this.
So speeding through it, he basically says, oh, I fancy you. She's like, okay, well, I will have sex with you on your wedding day so you can remember that. There's a naked lady hunt that makes no sense. Bunch of guys, like, you know, like a fox hunt.
Yeah, and they chase a naked woman.
And then the dogs rip the naked ladies to pieces. It's very horrific. There's blood everywhere. That doesn't happen, obviously, just have sex with them. I would say that that sequence is the most graphic one I feel like we've seen ever in a canon film so far. Because there's a few shots where I feel like you think you can see it going in.
You know, I watch these movies, and the only thing at this point that has any interest for me is trying to spot some dongs.
Yeah, there were some dongs in this one. That's what I'm saying. You can totally see it. There's one where the guy's pumping the bud, and you can get see the... When I say the top of his dong, I mean the part of his dong towards his body.
You know, he was penetrating that front butt.
Yep. Yeah, that's what he was doing, man. Not the back butt, the front one.
Oh, man, I look so forward to the days when we don't have to watch sex films anymore.
Oh, man. This is podcast, right? It's all we talk about all the
That's
time.
That's all we talk about. Let's talk about politics. You know, communism. Great idea. Doesn't work in practice.
We can't talk about politics because people are sick of politics. I turn on my phone now and it's just like, I look at like a billion tweets about politics. People come to us, Justin, for the escapism. Do you know what I mean? They want to hear about Trump. They want to hear about pumping, you know? Yeah. Like...
And us suffering watching it.
Yeah, and us suffering by watching it.
So, Nana treats all the men that want to either claim her or to call her, and she just treats them like garbage. She makes one of them act like a dog.
Yeah, the count, she's like, I want to be a boy. And he's like, oh, Nana, that would be terrible. No one loves me. Play like a dog. And she, like, makes him, like, catch a twig out of the river, I guess. Like,
yeah.
She really does a bunch of, like, weird sort of S&M-style boundary testing with him, but he loves it. She goes to a special lesbian party with kind of like a female kind of David Bowie, kind of Julia Davis type. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Which has nothing to do with anything. But probably the climax of the film, I guess, in some terms, is she is hanging with one of our guys who fancies her. And he's like, oh, here's this slave. I guess what you would call, it's like a mandingo, right?
Yeah, mandingo is what it's called. And she's like, I want to bet all of your money on this Mandingo.
No, it's like, I think what happens is she wants the Count, who's previously pretended to be a dog for her, to buy him and then make him fight, right?
Yes.
So, like, she convinces him to buy him, but not before she's made sure to test the merchandise. And what I can only... Now, this movie was scored by Enrico Morricone, apparently.
Yep.
Which he obviously just tossed off in an afternoon. And clearly they said to him, oh, can we have some horror film music? And he's like, why do you want the horror film music? And they're like, oh, no reason. And it's because in the sequence where she sucks off the black guy behind a horse. There's a lot of, like, racist kind of, like, you know, horse implications, if you know what I mean. The music that is playing and the face that the man is making is, it's just like a, it's like a horror sequence.
And then we get to the real set piece of the movie.
Yes.
Where there's a Mandingo fight, even though that it's a black guy and a white guy, and then fight what feels like 30 minutes.
Oh, it feels like forever. They slowly build up to the fight. They're like, the guy just, he's like, oh, a cock fight. And I was like, okay, that's a weird way to refer to it, but sure. But they start with like ridiculous nails, like big tinfoil. Like it looks like, you know, if you went to your kitchen, got some tinfoil and wrapped it around each of your fingers, that's what it would look like in terms of the quality. They start with those, slicing each other up. Then they add tinfoil spurs, like, on the backs of their legs, just like actual cockfights had. And then they are forced to, in what is probably the most debasing thing I've seen in a kind of film in a while, to, like, wear, like, little chicken hats to fight. It is horrific. It's, like, pretty much, I would say that, including the blackface segment and the horror music sex scene, and then this, it is pretty much the most racist film we've seen since Goodbye Uncle Tom. It's not on that level, but it is...
It's not even close to Goodbye Uncle Tom. Come on, let's be honest.
Already for the period of time, like, we're already in the 80s by this point, you're kind of like, come on, guys. Are you seriously, like, Golden Globus, like, signed off on this, you know, and they're like, this is fine.
Well, this movie is just shit. I hated this movie. Oh, and yeah. It all wraps up with Nana fucking just driving by the not protagonist's wedding, showing her boobs, and him just abandoning his wife.
Yeah.
And chasing after her, and then they fuck in the cab.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much the end of the movie, isn't it?
Obviously, also Count, what's his face, is destitute.
Count Dog.
Yeah, Count Dog, his wife breaks up with him, and then somebody goes at the burlesque, goes, oh, did you know Nana's leaving Paris? And they're like, oh, really? Yeah, I wonder what she'll get up to next. And she leaves Paris on a balloon, going down on the guy controlling the balloon. And then it's just the end.
Now, so this movie assumes a lot of things. Firstly, that we are going to fall head over heels with this Nana.
Yeah, she's got that sort of fresh-faced, youthful look. But she's also, I mean, I don't know, is this unfair to say? She's also just very normal-looking, I thought.
Yeah, she's got kind of a girl-next-door kind of look.
Yeah.
She's not likable or charming in any way at all.
Yeah, she does nothing. You have to basically fall in love with her because you saw her boobs and saw her play with a rabbit in the nude once.
People love watching her play with a rabbit.
Oh yeah, they love it.
Ah, this movie's bad. Let's stop talking about this movie.
There's really nothing to say about it. Like, do you know anything about the actress or anything about...
Katja Berger appeared in only 8 films. One of them was Absurd, directed by Joe D'Amato, who's a really shitty Italian director.
Okay.
And that's pretty much it.
I mean, that's kind of a theme for our Golden Globus era so far, which has been shitty Italian directors.
Well, this wasn't a shitty Italian director who made this one. This was a... It looks like a director from Israel.
Oh, you said the Lemon Popsicle baby fucking movie?
Yeah, the baby fucking movie is one that he made. All right, so does this make it into the canon? No.
Yep, this movie does not go into the canon. And in fact, this is one that, you know, when you talk, right, about how, you know, the history of film and films that are on nitrate that we're losing forever and how there's like 200 films that no one will ever see.
More than 200, probably like 200,000.
Well, you know what I mean? Like the movies from that era that are confirmed like lost forever.
Yeah. This one should be thrown in the trash heap.
Yeah, this one should just be joining those movies because there's no reason for anyone to ever watch it. There's nothing good about it. There's no redeeming factors about this whatsoever, and it's probably one of the worst ones we've ever seen.
Yeah, it was terrible. I'd rather watch, like, I don't know, the Wet T-Shirt movie than this one again.
Yes, it's true.
I think that the thing, too, is that we're getting into a period where they have a kind of level of gloss and budget to them that they don't get away anymore on that shitty charm that we could make fun of before.
Yeah, like, this definitely feels like a movie that again, it's that feeling of they were like, oh, we should make kind of like a prestige film. It's like, we did Lady Chatterley's Lover, right? So that worked. So let's do a sexy film shot mostly in the same house from another classic novel. And Lady Chatterley's Lover is tedious, but like,
but it
has
feels like
structure.
A movie, at least.
Yeah, it's like a movie. Whereas this movie is just nothing. There's nothing.
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 All right, so we don't have any letters this week.
Wait. Remember, you can always send us letters to loosecannonspodcast@gmail.com. We love getting them.
So what are we going to recommend this week, Matthew? I think you know what we want to talk about, right?
Yeah, it's time to talk about it, because I saw it last night.
Yep, it's XXX, The Return of Xander Cage. Me and Matthew love Vin Diesel.
Yes. The thing is, Vin Diesel is one of those things where it's like, I'm never really sure, am I laughing with him or at him? This one, maybe a little bit more towards the at him.
Well, we have to say that the XXX franchise, which came out in 2002, was pre-9/11, and it's a terrible movie.
Did
it's
you say
really
pre-9/11?
Bad. No, sorry. It came out in 2002, but it was filmed before 9/11.
Oh, it was filmed before 9/11. Okay, because I was like, Justin, you don't understand how time works, clearly, if you think 2002 is pre-9/11. Like,
yes. And it's a terrible movie that, for some reason, some people have fond memories of. Mm-hmm. And there was a sequel starring Ice Cube that Vin Diesel had nothing to do with. Mm-hmm. And then the franchise just died. No one ever expected to get another one of these.
Yes, and in fact, it's not even clear why it has another one. Although, it kind of is once
you've watched it. Because Vin Diesel wants it.
Because, clearly, this movie is fascinating because it's like Vin Diesel watched the evolution of the Fast and Furious franchise, right? Which it goes from one shitty movie, then one movie which I really enjoy, a lot of people don't like, and then it's, by the time you get to number five, five, right?
Five, yep.
It starts to turn into something where they've built a team of lovable, multicultural characters having world-trotting adventures that you are really into. And it's like, Vin Diesel was like, we've had two shitty films, so what if I just jump straight to setting up, like, Fast Five, but as XXX3? Because this movie's entirely about retconning XXX into the Fast and Furious style of film. That's all it's about, and it's all it wants to be, except it hasn't done very well, right?
It's done pretty well in places that are not North America.
So has it been released in China? Did you pay attention to
that? I don't think it's been released in China yet.
Because I feel like China will be the big factor into whether or not we see more XXX movies, because mm-hmm. I think they're banking pretty hard because of the way that Vin Diesel's team grows to include a Bollywood actress and, of course, Donnie Yen. It becomes about, like, I want this movie to be successful in India and China, and then we can make more of them.
Yeah, North America doesn't really matter that much. People don't like me there, really.
Except, you wouldn't believe that watching this film, because this movie is such a titanic monument to Vin Diesel's ego. You will
and
never...
how amazing he is, like, and how he will open your life just by being there.
Every character loves him. Every character keeps saying how great he is. Every woman in the film, and probably, I don't think there's a movie where this is, like, less believable that every woman would throw themselves at a character. Because we have Vin Diesel, who's, like, over 50 now, isn't he? Like,
He's gotta be. He looks old in this movie, too.
He looks old. He doesn't look in shape. When he's wearing his big, like, he's wearing the jacket from XXX1, which I guess is some sort of cool reference, the big fuzzy jacket. That jacket looks like it's been in a cupboard for fucking 15 years.
They make a whole point of him being like, the fans are going to want to see this jacket, so we're actually going to say, I got to go get my jacket.
Yeah, and he does go get the jacket, and he looks like a fucking, like, old tramp. Like, if you were standing next to this guy, like, waiting for the bus when he's wearing that jacket, you would move away. Like, but yeah, everyone who sees him is like, listen, XXX, I just gotta tell you, I gotta fuck you immediately. If you want to, I can get you drunk. Like, there's one character, the most annoying character in the film, this sort of comedy relief female character, who is basically like, please have sex, dirty S&M sex, the minute she meets him. Every character who sees him goes, oh my god, that's Xander Cage. And you're like...
Even though, in the film world, it's established he's only ever done one mission, and it's the one that's in XXX.
Yep, and he has been invisible, supposedly, for like 15 years. He's been in hiding, so much so that the CIA can't find him. So the fact that everyone is like, oh my god, remember that guy from 15 years ago? I don't remember what I had for fucking dinner last night, right? I'm not gonna remember a fucking, like, event from 15 years ago that was undercover anyway.
But the good thing about this movie is Well, other than Vin Diesel making a fool of himself, which is really fun, and the copious amount of stunt doubles that do all of his stunts.
Oh, yeah, that last scene where he, like, runs out of the exploding plane, I was like, that's obviously just some other fat, bald guy. Like, it doesn't look like him at all. It's incredible.
It doesn't matter. He's old. Let somebody else ski down hills and give high fives to people while he's skateboarding down a mountain.
Yeah, the skateboarding sequence, and then he fucks that bud, and then he leaves her a skateboard, and she's like, oh yeah, left me a skateboard.
A triple X branded skateboard.
Yeah, he has his own fucking, oh my god. Yeah, all I wanted was, that whole sequence that they're in the movie, right, is he's skating down the hill so he can get the favela to see Brazil play Germany, and I was like hoping that it was going to be that match where Brazil played Germany and Germany beat them like 7-1 and the kids were all crying. Also can't beat the fact that, it's a spoiler, but you see him again at the end of the film. I really enjoyed that football player, Neymar, is in it, Neymar Jr., and they just blow him up straight away. I thought that was hilarious. But he survives, so it's not all for naught.
He's like, I'll be seeing you later. No, you won't.
Yeah, no.
You will not be seeing this person.
I mean, really what saves this film for me is Donnie Yen, let's be honest.
Oh, Donnie Yen is so much fun in this movie.
He's like, there's a classic, I think Triple X is a fantastic example of coolness, right? The difference of coolness. That movie's entirely to make you think that Vin Diesel is as cool as hell, right? Vin Diesel keeps being told he's cool. He's trying to dress to look like he's cool. There's a whole segment of the film where Donnie Yen is literally in like a Tommy Bahama shirt, and he still is like the coolest fucking person you've ever seen.
Donnie Yen only gets exponentially cooler standing beside Vin Diesel.
Oh my god, it's intense. It's like characters have to actually like shield their eyes as to how cool fucking Donnie Yen is. It's like you put Vin Diesel next to him because it's like you're like one of those, like, you know, the light masks you put when you're yeah, when you're filming.
And the thing is too is that it feels like they just went, Donnie Yen, you can just go shoot your own action scenes.
Yeah, because he just does kind of stuff on his own that's cool for a while.
So obviously we recommend this movie.
Yeah, Triple X is, I mean, I didn't watch the first two, but you did. How did
we
you
did
feel about watching the first two beforehand?
Triple X, the first one, is awful. It's almost incompetent in the way that it's constructed. But there are so many references to Triple X in this new one. But Triple X 2 is a competent action film. It's fine, but it doesn't have the joie de vivre that the first one does.
I have to admit that there is a character from Triple X 2 which appears in the movie and is supposed to be like the most incredible thing that will ever happen to the audience when he appears. And I honestly was like, I guess that's the guy from Triple X 2. I honestly,
oh my god. In our audience, everyone went wild.
Did they? I saw it in the cheap seats on a Tuesday because I was like, I missed the chance of seeing it in D-Box, which I was disappointed by. And I saw it in a theater that was almost completely empty. And I could occasionally hear one lone man quite far towards the screen going woo and clapping, and that was kind of enjoyable. Just the one guy.
Oh, so one guy was clapping. Oh, he was by himself too?
Yeah, he was definitely on his own.
When we saw the new Underworld movie, there was a guy at the back of the theater that would moan either in pain or orgasmically every like 15 minutes. Ooh.
I'm going to tell you, Justin, that man was me.
Yeah. But yeah. So Triple X3, I mean, if you haven't seen it by now, you're not going to go see it.
No, and honestly, like, I was a little disappointed in how, outside of, like, Donnie Yen sequences, the action is a little flat, honestly. It's not that well shot.
Oh, no, I enjoyed it.
I think that, like, the thing is, the main thing to take away from Triple X3 is, it feels like everyone involved in making it didn't realize any time had passed since 2002. Because
yeah, but that's why it's amazing!
It's shot almost exactly like a movie from that era. And
it starts with an opening credit sequence, those cliches zooming through an object for no reason.
Yes, it's very embarrassing, honestly. And there's a whole sequence in the middle where the two cool ladies, like, do, like, shooting everyone in the middle of the room doing poses. I honestly, like, was cringing during this. It's like this is not cool anymore.
No, it's still cool. If it's been that long, you can bring it back.
I did appreciate that Triple X was very much on that still the Fast and Furious thing where it's like, it's a very diverse cast, they go all kinds of places, all the women get lots of, like, cool beats. So, you know, it's like, it's still, like, on the money that way.
And, you know, Xander Cage, the things I do for my country.
Oh my god, yeah. Just like confusingly have sex with like 12 women for no clear reason. Like, why that
to the point of them dropping unconscious.
Yeah, he just straight up knocks them out.
I mean, that can be my recommendation too. XXX3.
XXX3, go and see it. You also saw, I haven't bothered to go and see it yet, but I know that you've seen it. Resident Evil, what's it called? Retribution?
No, that was the one before. It's called The Final Chapter.
Okay, The Final Chapter. How's that? Because I need to know.
I enjoyed it. A lot of people hated it because Paul W.S. Anderson makes a decision that he edits it more over the top than any movie ever. So there's like 3 cuts per second in the fight scenes, which I had just watched all the 5 Resident Evils leading up to this new one.
What, you watched them again?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because I wrote them for filmtrap.com, yeah, where I write movie reviews.
Yep.
And the pointlessness as it went along, I was like, ugh. And I made a decision. I'm never watching the first one again. That movie sucks.
It blows.
I hate it.
As a lot of defenders, though, that's probably the most defended of the Resident Evil movies. Of course, everyone was wrong about that, because the best one is the second one.
I got in a fight with Jay Clark at the screening of Resident Evil 6, where I was like, oh, the first one sucks. Trust me. And he's like, trust you! Trust you! I've seen the movie! It's great! I love it!
Nope. The first one is very boring. It's not good. Nothing fun happens in it other than that one slicing sequence, which is like in the trailer.
Oh, and she kicks the dog in slow motion.
Oh yeah, but she does so much cooler stuff in the second one. That whole crashing through a window backflip motorbike sequence.
Yeah.
Is like 10 times better. There's no reason to watch the first one.
The second one is just action from end to end, and our pal Peter Kaplowski discovered that it was because the second unit on that Resident Evil 2 was shot by Spiro Rosatos, the guy who does all the Fast and the Furious action now.
Well, there we go. It's a shame that the lighting in that movie is bad, though.
Oh, it looks super cheap and the sound effects are really shitty, too. But what are you going to do?
Yeah, well, they could remaster it. I would totally, like, see a remastered second one.
Well, and back to the sixth one. I was never bored, but the people that were with me did get bored. Because it's just non-stop action.
Mm.
And there's, like, they introduce another 6 characters that don't do anything. But, like, there's some really funny rip-off sequences. Like, they rip off the ending to RoboCop line for line.
Okay.
You'll know it when you see it. And they even do the Sherlock Holmes, like, I'm seeing into the future to see what you could possibly do. Which is funny because it's like 10 years too late.
So, as someone who has also seen all of the Resident Evil movies, how much does it pay off as a final chapter?
There's a funny, like, Saw-like reveal at the end of the movie that I think you'll enjoy.
Nice.
And it brings back a bunch of characters, including the villain from Part 3. Listen, the Resident Evil films are incomprehensible. They barely follow each other. They're all hard reboots of each other. Mm-hmm. If you remember Part 5, it ended with her at the White House.
Yes.
And her powers had been given back to her with an injection. Her, like, psychic powers and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Part 6 starts with everybody's dead. You don't see the battle. You don't see anything. And someone goes, oh, remember those powers I gave back to you? Oh, that was a joke. They weren't real.
Okay, great. Well, that's not true because is it not between 3 and 4... Like, it starts straight away after the previous one, and that's really good.
No, that's 4 and 5.
4 and 5.
But they're still hard reboots, because everybody dies.
True.
And usually any advancement that has been made is taken away from her.
All I need to know, Justin, is do I go and see it next Tuesday?
Yes. I think you'd enjoy it.
Okay, cool.
Don't see it in 3D. It'll be incomprehensible.
No, I have no interest in seeing it in 3D. No way.
Yeah.
You can't do fast cuts in 3D, and I don't know why everyone else tries to.
So, next week, we're doing House of Long Shadows, which is a horror film, like, well, it's more of a horror parody film, that, as I said last week, stars such luminaries as Vincent Price, Peter Cushing, Christopher Lee, and it's supposed to be not very good.
Okay, great. Well, not very good is going to be a step up from Nana, which was, as I say, trash that should be shot into space and never heard of ever again.
And remember, like we said before, send us your letters at Important Cinema Club Podcast. No.
Boo! Wrong podcast.
Send us your letters at loosecannonspodcast@gmail.com. Rate us and review us on iTunes.
Yeah, I mean, like, we're desperate, guys. Come on. We're suffering for you here right now. We're suffering.
Like, this episode was like walking through the desert dying of thirst.
Yeah, exactly. Like, with no oases in sight.
All right. Well, till then, my name is Justin the Clue.
I was Matthew Kumar.
Thanks for listening.
Hi, everybody.